Then, is there anybody here on behalf of Mr. Mars? Ms. Klein, then, good morning to you. You may approach.
Okay, please support Mr. Chief Justice. I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state in this matter. Your Honor, this is Mars' appeal of his subsequent petition for DNA testing, which was denied by the district court. I think what we have here is essentially a case of getting to the right result for the wrong reason. The biggest problem I see here is a failure of pleading. The statute was amended in 2015 by the legislature to essentially create a potentially endless loop of DNA litigation every time there's a forensic blip on the DNA radar that theoretically presents the possibility of additional DNA testing. But there are still requirements that have to be made, that have to be met, and particularly in the pleading. And in this case, I think we have a failure in the pleading, because what Mars alleged in his petition is not that there were more current techniques that might lead to more accurate results. He simply asserted that the FBI had essentially recalculated their genetic statistics because of additional testing kits on the market that test additional loci, and basically says, well, as a result of that, I'm entitled to new DNA testing. Well, no, he really isn't as a result of that. He needs to allege that there are different techniques available, which he did not say, and that the technique would be reasonably likely to produce more accurate and probative results. Well, I think you need to go back and, on the accurate and probative results prong, look at what the original DNA testing results were in this case. The original DNA testing results showed a probability of 1 in 433 quadrillion that somebody other than the defendant was the donor of the DNA that was found. I'm not sure how you get more accurate and probative than that. I think that the district court, based on the, I think, on an old reading of the statute, said, well, no, you already had your shot at DNA testing and we denied it the last time around. You're essentially alleging the same thing here. We've already ruled on that. I think perhaps had the pleadings been done more in accordance with the statute, the result may have been different, but I think based on the record that we have right now, the district court properly dismissed the petition because there was simply not alleged what needed to be alleged in order to obtain additional DNA testing.
How can you get a probe or a result which is 10,000 times the number of people in the world? Why does the results have to go out to that significant factor when if the amount is more than there are people in the world, then the result shows that there is no one else in the world that could have been a contributor to this factor? Why do they send it out to the 18th power? That's almost as many stars as there are in the universe.
Well, I think it's based on their statistical probabilities.
Once you reach more than there are people in the world, even if you counted all the people that were deceased since the beginning of time, you wouldn't reach that number.
Well, I think it speaks to the very uniqueness of this particular sample of DNA, that there must be something particular about this that is so completely unique that it would be essentially impossible.
And he doesn't argue that the test was wrong. He just argues that there might be some other test that might produce a more accurate result.
He doesn't even really do that.
I beg your pardon, but does he focus on a potential discrepancy between the 03 and the 04 test? What's on everybody's mind,
the discrepancy that he talks about? I think was addressed in an old hearing, and what it was is that apparently State Patrol had done a presumptive test and found nothing, and somehow the material was transferred to the UNL DNA lab because they used a slightly different test kit than did the State Patrol. They picked up a weak result where the other one did not, so they actually wound up running the DNA test. based on that weak resolve, and he's alleging that this is, was the inconsistency, and Drs. Weiscarver and Carmela Strong explained that, no, it isn't an inconsistency, because what showed up was alleles basically particular to the test kit we use, and since the other test kit doesn't test for those particular things, it wouldn't have shown up. And they said that's not an inconsistency, it's just a distinction between the two tests. If you look at the overlap of the alleles that both test kits test for, then there is absolutely no inconsistency, and they are basically both spot on this. So I think that was the inconsistency that he referred to, and it really
and the test didn't show anybody else's DNA on the victim's underwear.
Correct.
Other than the victim and the perpetrator.
Yeah, him and her. Yes.
So this is a rule that excludes anyone else from being the donor of the sample? Is that what DNA does? It excludes other people from being the donor?
DNA, as when you're speaking in terms of absolutes, DNA can only absolutely exclude somebody. They can say positively, this is not the donor. When you get to inclusions, then you go into statistical probabilities, which is where all the tables that the FBI and other agencies have done based on genotyping and coming up with statistical probabilities.
So the, what it says is that in the quadrillions, that is the probability that someone else was the donor.
Right.
One in 431 quadrillion.
Right.
Which is 10 to the 18th power.
That's a lot of zeros. Yeah. It's
Counselor, are the jailhouse confessions relevant to our inquiry?
I think they would be. I think they would be.
Under the terms of the statute, how are they relevant?
Because I think you have to look at the DNA testing statute says that techniques that would lead that provide a reasonable likelihood of more accurate and probative results. Well, I don't know if they're talking about just, I suppose they're talking about just the DNA testing, but the jailhouse confessions, I think, probably played a minor role, I guess, under the testing thing, because he did, in fact, confess to a number of other inmates, and in fact, he actually pled guilty to the offense.
But
and
that,
I think, well,
what about the provision in the statute that the testing may produce non-cumulative exculpatory evidence relevant to the claim that the person was wrongfully convicted or sentenced?
Well, if we're talking in terms of non-cumulative exculpatory, then you have to go back and look at, I think, the sum total of the evidence that originally warranted his conviction. In this case, he pled guilty. You've got staggering DNA results and the fact that he's confessed to a number of other people. I think if you look at all of that, you have to, that factors into the cumulative effect.
Well, he hasn't established that there would be any exculpatory information produced.
I'm sorry, couldn't quite hear
he
you.
Hasn't established that there would be any exculpatory information obtained from a subsequent DNA testing, and that's all this case is about.
Yes, I think that's right. I think that's right. If there are no further questions, we would ask that the district court's order denying DNA testing be confirmed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next case of the day is State versus Jose D. Cerritos Valdez. Justice Kelch is recused in this matter.